Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
Did you ever find Bugs Bunny attractive when he'd put on a dress and play a girl bunny?
No.
Neither did I. I was just asking.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. Yeah. Did we lock you in a dumpster one time?
I got out.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
That's somebody's daughter up there.
I was just going to say that.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
Dynamite drop in money. And broadcast school has really paid off.
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour two. Dirt and Sprague here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, and of course, YouTube.com. You can reach the show, the Vancouver Ford text line, 503-864-6326. They treat you right before, during, and after the sale. Visit them at vancouverford.com. You can get
bring
your
yes.
mail sack questions into the Vancouver Ford text line today. The mail sack is going to be at 8:15. So hopefully we get some good mail sack questions. Summer is dwindling down. School is getting back in session. Football season is upon us.
Yeah, for a lot of people, today is day one. This is when it begins for a lot of folks.
Yeah, the Blazers are almost back in camp. I mean, what? Oh my God.
What? No, I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
We will get to a lot of dealings here. The old breakfast menu has Stuart Mandel on the schedule at 7:30.
Yes, it does.
We'll talk some college football with him. May get to Dabo. Dabo will no longer be taking calls from Tyler in Spartanburg.
Nope, he's wussing out. Dabo doesn't want calls anymore.
Well, I mean, you lose that first game to Georgia, but two tutties.
I think two tutties, have we reached that point where Clemson can find a moral victory if it's like 28-14? Is that better?
Because they'd lose the spread. The spread's 13.5.
13.5.
Yeah.
Part of me looks at that game and I'm like, are they going to keep it within 21? Like, if you get blown out in that game, what if that's Oregon, Georgia, 2 years ago equivalent, 42-7? Ooh, Dabo got me in trouble.
Tuesday's a weird day of week one because I want to talk about all of it right now. But I'm like, we got Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And, oh my God, that game.
I had a buddy that asked me that yesterday. He was like, are you guys jacked for football season? I was like, yeah, but we're also in this weird mode where we've like been previewing for so long that we just need more to react to. Like, yeah. I'm almost out previewed. It's like the 2 weeks between the Super Bowl, that first week you do a little bit and you're like, you got to hold it. It needs to get here fast.
We may get to landing in the second hour. I'm going to give you baseball stuff.
Fire away.
I got baseball stuff to throw at you.
Let's do it, dude.
But we'll start the second hour of the program. Oregon State has their quarterback.
Yes, they do.
They announced it yesterday.
Released that depth chart.
They did. The depth chart, QB1.
Create a little beaver buzz, maybe.
And Javonte McCoy was the one that was QB1. It was not Ben Gilbranson.
Don't spit your coffee out there.
As Kerry Agers reported.
That was well played.
And it wasn't Johnson, as many thought it could be. It seemed like it was those two, and McCoy was a pretty easy third option there.
Yes.
And that was not the case. Trent Bray yesterday at his press conference talked about Javonte McCoy and how he earned quarterback one.
It was real close all fall camp, and just kind of the last week, Javonte was just on a big uptick, kind of separated himself a little bit, and so that's kind of what led to the decision to go with him.
Was there anything specific you saw that separated himself from?
Yeah, he started making the plays we need him to make, the comfort with the offense, and then doing stuff with his legs, which is what we like about him in the first place, is not only his ability with his arm, but ability to make plays running the ball when things break down, and that's kind of what we saw that last week.
Is there any plan for the other two in the first game?
Yeah, we're still just, absolutely. Ben, again, a great quarterback. We know we can win with him. He's going to have an opportunity. Same thing with Jabari. So there's a plan, and that's kind of what Coach Gunderson's going through right now, is what exactly that looks like.
Did you feel like it was an easy decision, a hard decision? How would you kind of describe the decision with your conversations with Coach Gunderson?
Yeah, it was tough because it was close. I mean, it was a good battle all fall camp. And then when we look back at the whole body of work and kind of who was trending up, that's kind of what eventually made that decision for us.
So there's Trent Bray yesterday at his press conference. McCoy last year at Idaho had a 65 completion percentage, 2,900 yards, 15 tutties, 8 picks, an 8.2 yard average, a 143.7 rating, and he ran for 188 yards. But Giovanni McCoy surprising a lot of people by being announced as QB1 in Corvallis.
Yeah, this is the funny thing. And I look, what the hell do I know, right? I'm not at practice every day breaking down the All-22 film Monday through Friday. I wasn't surprised by this at all. I just kind of from the outside looking in, if I'm trying to discern what are the most important qualities for an Oregon State quarterback, I would start with one, you want somebody with a little bit of experience, and that kind of eliminates Jabari Johnson. I mean, he's never taken a snap in college football. So there's a lot of potential, a lot of promise there of what he can be, but it's also a wild card, right? He was a redshirt freshman, I believe, last year for 1 year coming in, so you don't know what you have officially there. And Gold Branson has played, but I've also seen that at Oregon State, and I know that there's some limitations on what he can do when he's not a great athlete and he can't move. And so this was the guy that always made the most sense to me. The ironic part is we all tout, myself included, his athletic ability being one of those reasons. And then you mentioned his rushing yards. He only ran for 188 yards last year.
Yeah.
Now, I did not watch a lot of Idaho Vandal football. I don't know how much of that was scheme, how much of that was his offensive line sucked. I don't know why he only ran for 188, because when people talk about him, and when I saw him in the spring game, he looks like a dynamic athlete and a guy that can make plays with his legs. He's been a consistent thrower of the ball the last 2 years. Completion percentage, you know, around 65%, if not higher than that. You mentioned the touchdown interception ratio was good last year, even better the year before at Idaho, where he threw for nearly 30 touchdowns. Like, this is a guy that has starts. This is a guy that has experience. Idaho usually plays one or two games a year where you're playing one of those bigger programs, a la the Oregon game this weekend. So he's had moments and opportunities. I think they played at Cal last year and he performed pretty well in that game. So this was the one that I always kind of circled making the most sense to me. Now, I think ultimately, as they alluded to there, you're going to see all three of these guys play not only this weekend, but maybe throughout the course of the year. But if I'm looking for a guy in week one, if I'm a Beaver fan, this would have been the guy that I was rooting for, and I would be happy with the news that he's won the starting job.
So I put a poll question up yesterday afternoon after it was announced. McCoy is QB1 for Oregon State on the first official depth chart. Which quarterback will start the most games for the Beavs the season of the three, McCoy, Gulbranson, or Johnson? I voted Johnson.
You did?
Yeah. I think what you're saying about McCoy is fine. He was good at Idaho. I think based on the intel, it seemed like it was a debate between Gulbranson and Johnson almost the entire way.
Mm-hmm.
And then McCoy pops up and becomes one, kind of makes me think, okay, we want a more dynamic athlete than Gulbranson at quarterback.
Yes.
But if this doesn't go well, we have a reason to give it over to...
Give it to the young guy that you can build around. Yeah, yeah, at some point.
Allow him to be the young guy who gets his feet wet and kind of gets it, try to settle in and maybe become the quarterback of the future for Oregon State, at least in the relative future, barring portal stuff. So that's kind of how I view it. I could be wrong. McCoy could be a good player for this offense and for Gunderson, and he earns it and keeps it. And, hey, we'll talk about it as it goes. But my read on it was Johnson or Gulbranson and McCoy getting it makes me wonder, like, okay, we'll see all three of them versus Idaho State, and then what do we see at San Diego State?
That's your first real game.
And then Purdue, and then Oregon. Like, and those are the next few games, and if it doesn't go well, and let's say you're 3-2, or you're 2-3, or whatever, yeah, then you got a reason that you can turn it over to a freshman and say,
no doubt.
Yeah, we're just going to let him try to figure this out and build within the offense as the season progresses.
Yeah, similar to what some Oregon State fans wanted to see last year with Aiden Childs, right? Of DJ
exactly
half of the year, you lose to Arizona, and you're kind of like, you know, we're fine. We're not terrible, but he's not a game changer. Why don't we get ready for the future? I don't disagree with that notion at all. I think the good thing about Oregon State's schedule is, one, you get a cakewalk in week one, and then the next three games are like challenging games.
Tough
games. You're going to know who you are. And like a month into the season, you could lose to San Diego State, Oregon, and to Purdue. You could win two of those games. I have no clue how the first month's going to go for them.
Being 1-3 would be a tough start.
It'd be tough, but to your larger point, if that's if you're looking at a 2-2 start, you know, maybe you eke out a win at San Diego State, but then you lose to Oregon and then you lose to Purdue, I'd have no problem with them saying, you know what, 2-2, let's hand the keys over to the young guy and let's build a little bit and see what he can do going forward. The schedule gets a little bit easier after that first month, a little more manageable with, you know, Nevada's and Colorado State's and UNLV's in there.
Well,
maybe a freshman could win.
Yeah, but do we know that?
No, I have no clue. Nobody has any clue how good any of these teams are.
Because I don't even know how good San Diego State's going to be. They've got a new coach. And so, like, if you lose to San Diego State... Nevada was just up double digits on a good SMU team.
They were as a 28-point underdog.
They're an interesting team. I'm rooting for my alma mater, but when I talk about them with people, it's always a lot of like, you know.
Rightfully so.
And I hope I'm wrong. I want the Beavs to be 8-4. That's my hope, and better would be great, but I also am not all that confident.
Yeah. I think this position is going to dictate a lot of it, and that's why we've eyeballed this news for a long time, waiting to find out who was ultimately going to be named the starter. I also think one of the other big questions I have for them this week, now that we've gotten this one out of the way of who the starting quarterback's going to be,
yeah,
that's what does your wide receiver room look like? I know Beaver fans are optimistic. Darius Clemens was a highly touted recruit, local kid who's come back to the West Coast from Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
He was at that program for 2 years. He had 4 career catches. So how much of that was just the logjam of talent in front of him and he couldn't break through? How much of that was he just isn't living up to the potential? Like, that's a boom or bust kind of guy, but sometimes recruits just aren't quite what they're billed to be coming out of high school. So that to me is another question mark. You might have a number one wide receiver on your hands. You might not. Like, those are the things you're going to find out in the first month of the season. And that's why I think so many fans are reacting the same way that I would. If you ask me how good Oregon State's going to be this year, I shrug too. I don't know. I don't know much about this team.
I just need to see some of what they are, because it's a new coaching staff. I know Bray has stayed.
Well, there's so many new players too. They lost so much from their roster last year.
They did.
Lost half of their returning production almost.
They also just lost one of their best edge rushers
right.
And Kelsey Howard. So
which is for the season.
You know, I don't know. There's just a lot of question marks, and I hope that, you know, they can go out there. Idaho State should be a win.
Yes.
And if they look the part and blow out an FCS team, you're going to feel good at the start of it, and then you go on the road instantly and get a real challenge.
Yeah, I think I've reached the point, if I were a Beaver fan, that you thank him for his service, but I don't really want to see Ben Gulbranson play this year.
I don't see. Yeah, that's the thing is, I think at this point with that announcement, Gulbranson's only playing either via blowout
or injury.
Yeah, I think this is a McCoy Johnson Gulbranson. If you what was the official? I got it right here. The official depth chart was
The backup.
Gulbranson was listed as the backup, but I still think if you actually had to play it out, it's McCoy Johnson Gulbranson.
Yeah, and that's the way I think as a fan that I would want to see it. McCoy has played. He is a serviceable quarterback. He can use his legs. I like that dynamic that he brings. And then the idea and the potential of a Jabari Johnson is why you're going to want to see him play this weekend, because that to me, there's a higher ceiling there on what he can be than maybe the other two guys. Because McCoy's played a lot. He's been at Idaho for 3 years. He's a senior, been around a long time. He might have another year of eligibility left after this. But to me, the promise of what Johnson could be is more exciting. I don't really want to see Ben Gulbranson play this year.
Does the star power of this person do it for you? Next on The Fan.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the audio.
Dirt said something yesterday, and it got me thinking a little bit, because I think he's in the vast majority of the American sports fan.
Mm.
And I was just curious, so I discovered that my YouTube TV doesn't have the MLB Network.
It does not, no.
So I didn't get to watch the Maddux doc that came out on MLB's network on Sunday.
I also discovered that this weekend. That my I guess they ended last year. They couldn't reach an agreement. Yeah. They lost the MLB Network.
And I've seen some clips from it. There's some really good legendary stuff from my guy Greg Maddux, and just how smart and ahead of things he was. You know, letting Jeff Bagwell hit a home run in like May or June or whatever it was, and then saying to his catcher, oh, he's going to expect this pitch when we face him in the playoffs, and then he threw him a different pitch and struck his ass out.
Yeah.
And so like, I still want to watch it, so I hope they post it online. But you said like baseball is over for you, and I think you are in the absolute right space for most people, especially mm-hmm. in these parts. We got Oregon State football, Oregon football, Huskies, Cougs.
Seahawks kick off in a week,
right? Like all the other NFL teams and the fan bases we have. Football season is here. And I'm just curious, like, Aaron Judge doesn't break through, but he's doing Barry Bonds things.
He is doing Barry Bonds things.
He clipped 50 homers again.
Yeah, he hit two the other day.
He's at 51 right now.
Yeah.
And, like, that used to be the thing to get us to watch baseball at this point.
Right.
And I, you know, time has evolved and gone past. Like, it's crazy. I still have the Bonds home run record breaking newspaper in a box at my house. I remember watching that. And it doesn't feel like that long ago, but it was. Yep. And Aaron Judge is doing this again and again and again, and he's doing it as a Yankee, and I don't think it's doing anything for anybody, and that's kind of remarkable to think about, but that's also, I think, the power of football and how people have shifted their focus.
I think that's part of it. I think the other part of it is you can debate Barry Bonds until you're blue in the face, but because of him, this whole American League record, real record, non-steroid record thing, I just don't think it draws fans in. I mean,
I'm not even talking records. I'm talking plays. I think he's going to hit a home run,
probably,
and that's remarkable.
It is remarkable. I would also, as a known Yankee hater, tell you that how many of those are pop flies in Seattle, right? I mean, how many of those are he's hitting home runs because he's playing at a softball field. It's like 242 down the line. Look at that. He hit one off the end of the bat and it found a way to go out of the yard. I have to sneak that in there whenever we talk Yankees. I don't think he draws people in because of the record stuff. He is an unbelievable baseball player. He's one of the best hitters of this modern generation. He is on an absolute tear year after year after year. Still bummed my team didn't sign Aaron Judge. It would have been a lot of fun to have him in our uniform.
Guys would be on fire.
But I think ultimately if you're really looking for, like, 50 home runs is cool, but it's not going to cut through. Like, we've seen how many guys over the last 25 years hit 50 home runs in a season. Now, he might be bordering on 60 plus again, which he broke the American League record a couple of years ago. It didn't have the same feeling. If you told me right now that Aaron Judge was at 62 bombs and he had a month to go in the regular season,
you'd care.
You're glued to it every day.
You would be.
Because then you had a legitimate chance to break the home run record. And again, we can debate the legitimacy of that home run record, but it's like, it's almost like we talked about it with Michigan earlier, taking away a national championship. Like, they won the game. I saw it. I know what happened. They won that title. You could take it away from them, but I know that they were the champion that year. And you can try and sell me on an American League record or a real record. I don't know what Aaron Judge is on, if anything. And the real record is 72. So until he gets there, mm-hmm. To me, that's what you need ultimately to cut through. He is an unbelievable baseball player. But 50 home runs and 60 home runs, we've seen done a lot over the last 25 years.
Is he the face of the sport?
Probably. I think because Otani's not pitching this year. But yeah. Otani just was the fastest player ever to 40-40.
He's
a walk-off grand slam the other day.
50-50 season.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
He's the first Dodger player with 40-40? Did I read that right?
There are six that have done it all time.
Yeah. Did you see that there was a guy yesterday in a makeup game that was on the...
First guy to play on both teams in the same game.
Yeah, and he had to catch his at-bat.
His own at-bat.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But he won't get credit for the at-bat because
it was only one strike, right?
Strike.
If it was two, it would have been his at-bat.
It would have been his at-bat.
Even with a different hitter that he would have caught. So if that guy would have struck out, he would have been struck out catching the ball.
Are you calling for a meatball if you're the catcher there? Like, dude, give me a home run. Like, help me out a little bit here, buddy. What's your batting average on the year? I'm hitting like .174. Like, come on, can we get one in the double? You know, line one in the gap here. What are we doing?
So does he get credit for the result of the hit?
No.
No.
Whoever pinch hit for him
got the credit for
but he gets credit for the strikeout.
No, he doesn't get credit for
because it was only one pitch, so he doesn't get
I'm saying if he had two strikes into the at bat,
I think so.
That's a weird, it's a very
there's weird some role. Strange baseball crap.
What was his name? Jensen?
Danny Jensen,
Danny
I think.
Jensen? Danny Jensen. He'd been around a long time in the American League. Blue Jay for a long time.
Oh, okay.
It's funny that you brought up the Greg Maddux doc, because I had the same feeling about that this weekend where it dawned on me that I don't have that channel, and I was bummed because I was really looking forward to watching it. There were great clips that they were tweeting out, and I watched every clip that I could see on social media. The one about him calling his own game, where he based on the way he caught the ball from the catcher.
Every That's how he did it. He didn't do signs. Like, he did his own calls.
And then this rub of the eye, or this tug of the ear, or this
the mitt hitting his leg.
Yes, or, just insane how he was so creative, and that's why they called him the professor. And it was just that kind of stuff. I feel like is a lost art in the game.
I agree 100%. That's what it. That's why I. It's a little old guy nostalgia for sure, and it helps that I'm a Braves fan. But
yeah,
having guys that did that.
It was a craft to pitch. It wasn't, I need to throw 104 miles an hour. It's, I'm going to get you out with this changeup low and away because I set you up with a fastball low and away, and you're going to chase it.
Leo Mazzoni, the famous pitching coach for the Braves for many years, there's a clip that you can see from this doc where Bobby Cox tells Maddox, walk Luis Gonzalez. And he goes out there, and Gonzalez, I guess, hit Maddox really well, and Maddox basically said, give me two pitches. I'm going to pop him up to third.
And he did.
And Mazzoni's like, okay, and he went back, and Cox is really pissed off. He's like, God, this guy doesn't listen to me. Two pitches, Luis Gonzalez pop up to Chipper Jones at third.
It's so good.
Like,
dude.
That is just, that's legendary stuff.
It
and
is.
It's old school to kind of harken back to those days, but we all, I think, Swag's age, our age, we grew up with some of that lore, and I don't know, baseball's missing it because of the style of play. The way that people bitch and moan about the NBA, it's just three ball all day. I can't do it.
Can't be physical. Too many foul calls.
Yeah, and I kind of disagree with some of the narrative-based stuff, but like I kind of have that feel towards baseball. Pitchers don't go long anymore. They get pitch counts and, fastballs only and home runs or strikeouts. It's not the game that we played.
Not the game that I knew and loved.
Yeah, a little bit. There's a little bit to that, for sure. Yeah.
No, Maddox throwing a complete game, two-hit shutout on 87 pitches in an hour and 47 minutes is just beautiful.
Incredible. It's like, I don't need to strike everybody out.
No.
Here's a cutter in on your hands. You're going to roll it over to the first baseman.
And I think, frankly,
who's next?
It's more embarrassing these guys up there just taking mighty whacks and, it's a... just rolling over.
He's topping out at 88 miles an hour, and you can't hit it. And he's one of the greatest pitchers of all time. There's definitely a lost art to that. I saw Justin Verlander was doing an in-game interview during one of their games this weekend, and he was asked about the ideas that they floated of, mandatory innings limits for starters, and he didn't poo-poo it at all. He said he thought there was something there, and he feels like there's a bit of a hole in the game right now for relying on legitimate starting pitching and having to build your rotation and have guys that could be workhorses for you. Hmm. And I do think that's something that fans gravitate towards and attract to, of knowing I got X guy on the hill. Like, Greg Maddux is pitching tonight. I'm fired up to watch that game because it's Greg Maddux, and there's just not as many pitchers as there used to be to get you going that way. Paul Skeens has had that kind of year. I think with the overall attention stuff, it largely depends for most fans on how your team's doing. And if your team's in the mix, you're going to watch. And if not, when does the wild card round start? And I'll watch that.
I hate to say this because I want my team to win as everybody else wants their team to win. Yeah. I wonder if it really would be the best possible thing for their sport if the Yankees broke through again.
Yankees and Dodgers, you cannot top. For that sport, if you got that World Series, Ohtani and Judge, and Ohtani getting to the playoffs.
Ohtani winning a World Series would be big, but
you need one of those guys with the face of the sport argument to have a moment on the big stage.
The pinstripes with Aaron Judge and what he's been doing lately, that breakthrough for sure during football season.
Without a doubt it would.
Let's talk some college football. We pivot out of that. Dan Lanning had thoughts on Idaho. Yes, he actually had thoughts on Idaho football. What are you going to do about the quarterback, Dan? Idaho, they're so tough.
He's a good scrambler, man. How dare you disrespect the Vandals? Nameless, faceless opponent. 1-0 mentality, Sprague. Nobody's given us a chance.
I was told they had a center. There was no worry about a Poncho!
How dare you hate on Poncho?
And now we don't... Well, Dan Lanning might be hating on Poncho. I don't know what's happening at center, so we'll get to some of that. Dabo, no longer taking calls from Tyler Spartanburg.
No, weak-minded Dabo. He's going soft on us.
But the Daily Ticker is next. Stuart Mandel of The Athletic. Let's talk some college football with Stuart Mandel next.
In this wide world of sports, some stories can slip through the cracks.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules.
Pelican Brewing presents The Daily Ticker, where Dirt and Sprague visit with the insiders that are covering the stories you've heard about and some you haven't.
How'd you do that? Actually, I'm not even mad. That's amazing.
The Daily Ticker with Dirt and Sprague is poured by Pelican Brewing. Be ready for your next afternoon vacation with Beak Breaker Tropical. Pelican Brewing, born at the beach.
All right, Daily Ticker time here on a Tuesday, brought to you as always by Pelican Brewing. Visit pelicanbrewing.com for more details on locations, events, award-winning beers. Independently brewed since 1996, Pelican Brewing, born at the beach. We got our first taste of college football over the weekend. A great week zero, mind you. And now we head into week one. Excited to talk to our good friend Stuart Mandel of The Athletic, covering college football there at SL Mandel on Twitter. Go give him a follow. Stuart, thanks for the time this morning, man. Let's start with what happened in Dublin over the weekend. A lot of different offshoots of this. Talk about transfer portal, talk about, you know, overreacting or not overreacting to a loss in the regular season, the play of DJ. What was the biggest takeaway seeing a top 10 team go down over the weekend to Georgia Tech?
Yeah, I mean, first of all credit to Georgia Tech and a program that's been flying, you know, off the radar for a long time. And it was really eye-opening to see them come out and just run the ball down Florida State's throat like they did. That's a lot of credit to Brent Key, who took over as their interim coach 2 years ago and has just completely turned it around. You know, it was interesting for me is this is the first, truly the first game of the 12-team playoff era, is that while Florida State did not look good, I didn't panic for them like I normally would because they're not out of anything, right? I mean, obviously it's not good to start 0-1 in your conference, but, you know, I think we saw a team that had a lot of new pieces. Mike Norvell is once again riding heavy on the portal. And first impression is, yeah, they've got a long ways to go. But fortunately for them, it's a long season. And, you know, they could even lose another game at some point and still make the playoff if they can get things figured out.
It's interesting, Stuart, because we talked about that yesterday of just, you know, what it kind of means now with the expanded playoff. And some of the arguments against expanding from some college football people have been like, you water the games down a little bit. They don't mean as much. Whereas, like, you lose week one back in the day, it felt like for some contenders, well, the season's over now, despite what that end result may be. With the automatic qualifier for conference champions, it's different. And yet, I kind of had a somewhat opposite feel in the, I'm not, like, panicking for Florida State, but the fans certainly are still panicking the same way they did when one loss would ruin your entire season.
I think, and then I think a big part of that panic is there was so much riding on DJ, who you guys know well.
Yeah.
And obviously did not come out and have a great first game. I was struck by how conservative the game plan was and how often they had him throwing either behind the line of scrimmage or not far ahead of the line of scrimmage. They didn't really let him throw downfield till the fourth quarter. So I'm not going to, you know, I didn't come away from thinking, oh, he had a bad game. It was more like, huh, either they don't trust him or they don't trust that they can protect him, because they never really deviated from that until they absolutely had to.
Yeah. Yeah. The defensive line, probably a bigger concern with all the hype that they were getting coming into the year. Stuart Mandel, our guest, college football writer for The Athletic, at SL Mandel on Twitter. Go give him a follow. You had a piece a couple of weeks ago, I think, in your mailbag where you're just pondering Oregon and what step they need to take in order to win a national championship. They are a trendy pick, a top three team, I believe, in both preseason polls. Where are they lacking? Where is the step that you need to see? And what are your thoughts on Oregon going into 2024?
They should be fantastic on offense, despite losing Bo Nix, first-round quarterback. Dylan Gabriel comes in, was clearly the best quarterback available in the portal. I think to win a national championship, it's about the defense, and Dan Lanning and Tosh Lupoi have been trying to build a defense that looks like the ones they had at Alabama and Georgia, and I think they're heading in the right direction. It's just how close are they? You know, I did our Oregon scouting report for The Athletic, and I talked to an opposing coach who played them last year, who said, yeah, they're decent, but I don't think they're quite there yet. They have a lot of guys that are going to probably get drafted. I don't know if they have some elite guys that are going to be first or second round picks, but I could be wrong. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see when they get. I think they're going to cruise against a lot of the teams they play, but, you know, how do they play in the big games? And also, how do they handle all that travel? And that's really the unknown. This is the first year of these new, you know, nationwide conferences. And I look at their schedule and they're going to play this huge game against Ohio State at home. And then 6 days later, they're going to play at Purdue. And then in November, they're going to take trips to Michigan and to Wisconsin. That's not easy. Nobody would look at that schedule and say, oh yeah, they're definitely going to win 11 games. They've got their work cut out, I think, to live up to that number three billing.
Michigan got their notice of allegations, and as we await everything with Michigan and what their future is going to look like, they're the defending national champions, and obviously they've lost a lot, but they're still returning some pretty talented players at key spots. Sherrone Moore got some coaching experience last year in filling in for Jim Harbaugh.
it feels like narrative-based. Ohio State is probably almost universal, the number one pick for people in the Big Ten. And then Oregon, a pretty consistent, if not universal, second. Michigan kind of sitting there. What do you make of Michigan and how they're going to be with Oregon now in the conference, USC in the conference, Penn State having some hope that Franklin can get at least to the playoff with a two-loss type season? What are your thoughts on the defending champions maybe not being mentioned as much as even some of the newcomers to the conference?
They should be very good on defense again, despite losing some of the guys they have. Like, that's the side of the ball where they have two top 10 picks on their defense, two projected top 10 picks, and a bunch of other highly regarded guys that they're basically starting over on offense, including, to most troubling to me, losing your entire offensive line and, frankly, the first couple backups. Now, they're bringing in some experienced guys in the portal. And then I just saw right, you know, before I came on here that Sherrone Moore said they haven't decided on a starting quarterback yet. So just a lot up in the air on the offensive side of the ball. And with Texas coming there week two, it's that's a tough draw, especially after the last couple of years where they didn't play anybody at a conference. So somebody's going to step up in the Big Ten. I think Ohio State is definitely the class of the Big Ten, but I don't buy the notion that it's them and Oregon and then there's this big drop off. I don't know if it's Michigan. I don't know if it's Penn State. Somebody else that we're not talking about. Somebody's going to rise up and fill that void.
Interesting. We're talking with Stuart Mandel at The Athletic, at SL Mandel on Twitter. Go give him a follow as we get set for the start of college football season. When you look at the slate in week one, Stuart, I'm just curious. We were kind of talking yesterday about, you know, the consequential games for this weekend that maybe sway your opinion. You know, Florida State losing in week zero, all of a sudden there's a bit of a different look about them and a different feeling about them. What are some of those games that you circle that you think are going to have consequential outcomes from the opening weekend of the college football season?
I'm really looking forward to that Sunday game between USC and LSU because those are both programs, you know, both of those head coaches, they were hired a day apart from each other, Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley, such high expectations, haven't really delivered on it yet. And so I love these opening games where you already know whoever loses, that there's going to be this huge knee-jerk reaction about their coach. When, of course, as we just said, it'll basically just be one loss and see if you can regroup. But I'll be interested to see if either of those programs or either of those teams comes out and you're like, oh yeah, that's a possible playoff team. And then obviously the you know, the Saturday primetime game, Notre Dame going to Texas A&M. The interesting thing about that to me is if you look at Notre Dame's schedule, that might be the toughest game on the whole schedule. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty light, you know, they always play five games against the ACC. It's a pretty light draw. You know, playing at USC at the end of the season, who knows what USC would be like by the time they get to that. So, if they were to go in and win at A&M, at that point I'm thinking it's not if this team's going to make the playoff, it's how high a seed they can get. And then on the A&M side, you know, we're all curious to see how Mike Elko does in his first season.
If I was to give you a list of coaches who are facing just an enormous amount of pressure, and if they were to lose in this week one, you think the temperature gets the hottest. If I gave you Mario, Marcus Freeman, James Franklin, or Dabo, who would you pick between those four?
Some of those guys, while the fan base is frustrated with Dabo, or some of them might be, like, he's not under any job pressure. James Franklin's not under any job pressure. I don't even know that Mario Cristobal is, but I think Mario Cristobal does need to win that first game against Florida because he should. This is the most anticipated Miami team in a long time with Cam Ward, with Damian Martinez, with a whole bunch of other guys they got in the portal. And, you know, the guy that actually is on the hot seat the most is the guy on the other side of that, Billy Napier. So he needs to win that game. If Miami can't win that game against what people expect to be a middling SEC team, and obviously their in-state rival, yeah, you're going to see some Miami fans getting really frustrated.
Yeah, it's the beauty of college football, man. I can't wait for the reactions, the overreactions, all the craziness. Week zero was a good start. Week one is upon us. Stuart Mandel, The Athletic, covering college football at SL Mandel. Thanks, as always, for the time out here in Portland, man. Enjoy week one, and hopefully we can catch up again soon.
All right, thanks for having me.
Stuart Mandel, good stuff. For those watching on YouTube, we did tape that yesterday after the show. That's the way his schedule worked. That's the way it happens sometimes. He said, I can go at 9:15. We said, we're not on the air, but we'll play it on Tuesday.
He cannot do the 8 a.m. hour. It's too early for him.
Too early for some bros out there, yeah. Especially if you're a West Coast person. It's hard to book West Coast guests in a 6 to 9 time slot because some people just aren't up that early.
9 to 10 a.m. That's a little more in the wheelhouse.
What are you saying?
Colin.
Rui Hachimura. Let's get to something that he mentioned there. He said, no real pressure on Dabo, but does this add to it? Dabo's wussing out. That's next on The Fan.
It's crunch time.
Let's go!
Where Dirt and Sprague crunch the hot topics you want to hear.
What's the pressure? Don't sit here and act like there's no... We get nervous teeing off in front of a gallery on the 10th hole at Eastmoreland.
Crunch time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, with memberships as low as $9.99 per month. Find your crunch time in Portland, Vancouver, and online at crunch.com.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Memberships as low as $9.99 a month. Find your Crunch Time in Portland, Vancouver, online at crunch.com. We have a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Mail sack coming up at 8:15. Don't forget that. Get your mail sack questions into the Vancouver Ford text line.
I have a question for you guys.
In the mail sack? You have a mail sack question for me?
I have a mail sack question, yeah.
Ooh, don't tease me with a
good time. A fear of mine happened yesterday in Mexico.
Oh.
And I want to know how you guys would react.
Okay. I'm very excited about that. 503-864-6326. That is the Vancouver Ford text line. I have a couple of college football odds and ends to get to at the top of the hour, including, will this guy learn his lesson? And what do we expect from this player? I want to ask those. We'll get to Dan Lanning as well, as he had some comments, and I'm starting to get a little nervous about not naming a center yet.
Oh, Idaho, you should be so nervous.
A little nervous. We do already have a mail sack question on the Idaho game. People are excited for the Idaho game. Catch the fever.
Okay.
Who can forget this great moment in radio history?
There seems to be a lot of arrogance that came in. There was a lot of friends and family. I mean, 3 of the 10 on-field football coaches are external, experienced hires. Everyone else was an internal hire that had no experience before or was a former player or friend. So I'm curious, why are we paying you $11.5 million to go 4-4?
That was Tyler. Tyler,
where's the Tyler
Spartanburg?
Drop?
Tyler. Tyler. That's Tyler from Spartanburg last year in a call in to the coach's show of one Dabo Swinney. Why are we paying you $11 million to go 4-4? It was a viral moment. Clemson got off to a 4-4 start. Now, they did finish the season stronger than that, and we'll see how they do this year. But Dabo Swinney's been a coach for a long time. He's been doing a coach's show for a long time. Those are not back. We're into coach's show season.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of. And he has changed, Dabo has, the rules of his coach's show this year. After Tyler from Spartanburg torched him last year saying, why are we paying you $11 million? Dabo is no longer going to take phone calls on his coach's show.
Yeah,
what a pansy ass.
Well, we criticized Dion for blackballing Sean Keeler, who we had on the show yesterday, and he was quite delightful to talk to.
He was.
Dabo should he be in this too?
Yes, he absolutely should. I actually, you know what? I'm going to take it a step further. Dan Lanning doesn't do this. I don't know what Trent Bray's plans are for his coach's show.
No.
I think this should be an NCAA rule.
You have to take
questions. You have to face the listeners.
I agree.
You have to take random calls from Bob and Grant's pass, who's pissed that you ran it on second down. Why'd you do that, Dan? I want those phone calls on my coach's
Dan
show.
Dan, you sweet man.
Dan, what happened, Dan? Why can't you convert a fourth down, Dan? I want that guy. I want that content. Don't run away from the controversy here.
Dan, where's Poncho?
Yes, they have a starting center. Why won't you do it, Dan? This is ridiculous, Dabo.
I agree with you. It should
be pansy ass. What, are you scared of some... What, you're not confident in your team this year? You can't face down Tyler from Spartanburg?
No, I don't think he enjoyed that phone call. It was like a 2-minute phone call of that Tyler just going off, basically saying you're overpaid, you suck now. And look, I thought it was funny. They ended their year kind of strong, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, take that, Tyler. But you know what? Tyler was just thinking what we were all thinking. What's happening at Clemson?
Yes, what has happened to you?
And they got a big tilt with Georgia week one. I'm with you. They're the highest paid state employees in almost every state they work in.
Yes.
They should have to face some accountability.
You know how much money Mike Bellotti is still taking home from PERS to
he's
this day?
Still the number one PERS
to
person
this
in
day,
the state, man.
He should have to do a call-in show once a month just to get his PERS check.
Mike, in 1997, why did you do this on this play?
You beat Michigan, and the next week you get throttled by Washington State in 02. What happened, Mike? What happened?
Roper? Really?
Justin Roper was your answer. What were you thinking? I know it was 20 years ago.
Riley, you left us the second time, you bastard. Nebraska? Really? We had Beaver Juice.
Oh, man. Yeah, Dabo, look, he won five in a row to end the year, including a thrilling win in the Gator Bowl that I'm sure we all remember vividly.
Who did they beat, though? Like, I want to go back and look at who they beat.
They should have beaten Florida State. That was one of those games.
Oh, woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda game.
Tyler.
Tyler from Spartanburg. They should have won that. They turned it over like three times and I think gave up like two defensive touchdowns.
That was basically their game. Season, though, as they kept turning the ball
And then
ball
they didn't
over.
Have, if you remember correctly in that game, I think they didn't have a kicker or their kicker got hurt and they had like a walk-on guy and they missed like a 20-yarder to win the game and ended up losing it overtime.
Hey, they got Notre Dame. Notre Dame
that time was 15. Kentucky in the Gator Bowl.
In the Gator Bowl.
Yeah, 38-35.
So, their wins were Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Kentucky to end the season.
Would you like to care to guess how they won the game? I'll give you a clue. Cade Klubnik, 109 yards. Cade Klubnik, 205. Cade Klubnik, 219. Cade Klubnik, 100.
100 passing yards?
I don't think Cade Klubnik won them those games. I think their defense and run game won them those games. By the way, their OC, for all the Dabo talk, Dabo's probably not going to get fired if they have a disappointing season.
No, but I think they
Garrett
will have
Riley will.
Yes.
He will get fired if they suck again on offense because he was supposed to be Lincoln's little whiz brother.
Yes.
And that's just maybe it's a Klubnik thing. I don't know, but like that has not gone well since he left TCU.
I mean, we did that with at first it was a DJ problem, and then we kind of realized that maybe DJ wasn't it after he moved on and still isn't that good. And then we thought, oh, now it's a Garrett Riley problem, or maybe it's a Klubnik problem. Like Clemson's got an issue at quarterback, and they have since Trevor Lawrence left. They just have not been able to find the next guy. And DJ got off to a really good start his freshman year when he filled in, and then it felt like maybe there was some promise in year one, but just never fully lived up to the potential. He's not going to get fired this year. They go 7-5. He's got two rings. They're not going to fire him. But what they will have to do, and I think Josh Pate alluded to this on our show last week, of like it comes time where you sit him down and say, you need to change this. And maybe it's to the point where he walks away because he's not willing to do that. I still would be shocked to walk
he's
away from that
walk
salary.
Away from that
but
contract.
If you're Clemson and you're the athletic director, you sit down and you're going to use the transfer portal. Enough is enough. You are being stubborn. It is costing our team wins. Mm. We are lagging behind everybody else as a power team in the nation because of your stubbornness. And it will no longer be allowed as a head coach. And if you don't want to do it, here's the door. You can walk out. But if you're going to stay here as a head coach, you're going to hit the transfer portal and we're going to fill holes that way and we're going to use NIL to do it.
I'm not saying you're making an invalid point. How do you think that's going to go with what you just set up? You're the AD, and I think it's a relatively new AD, if I'm not mistaken, because their guy left for Miami like a year or two ago.
Oh, that's right. He did.
So you're the new guy here, not Dabo. Dabo has two natties. He has reversed the Clemsoning term to somebody else. How do you think that conversation is going to go exactly how you just described it?
No, Dabo will be pissed, and I don't care if I'm the new AD. If you go 8-4 again this year, it's back-to-back season.
But who
sub-10
wins that
wins?
Power struggle is what I'm saying, because Dabo's the highest paid one.
He is. Keep doing it your way. We'll fire you next year if you don't win 10 games.
Yeah.
We'll buy you out. Enough is enough.
That's a lot of money to buy out.
Sure
it is. That's the difficult part that Clemson's stuck in right now.
They got a lot of money over there in South Carolina. They won two national championships.
By the way, the poll question is going up. Should college football coaches be mandated to take call-in questions during their weekly coaches show? Is there a reason our coaches locally don't? I don't think they've ever done that.
I don't think the Oregon coach has ever done calls.
No, that show's not set up that way.
Yeah.
It's never been.
But why? Like Saban was taking calls until the end.
They used to do it. Oregon used to do it live, I think at the cooler.
Yeah.
And they'd have an audience at least there and people would be able to watch the show. Now they just do it in their studio in the football facilities.
So you should be able to take calls.
You should be able to take calls. I mean, yeah, you can pull that off. If you wanted to, you could do it. Saban's had some like hilarious rants from people in back in the day. Like if Nick Saban's willing to take calls on his coach's show,
that's what I'm saying.
You should be willing to take calls on your coach's
show. If anybody was like coaching their way out of needing to do that, it was him, and he just every week. All right, Phyllis, Tuscaloosa, go ahead. You're on with Saban.
The hell do you want, Phyllis? What are you going to complain about now? Seven national championships wasn't enough for you. You need
Nick,
more than
we
that.
Needed eight.
Yeah.
We needed eight.
You left the job undone, Nick. There you go. Dabo's wussing out. He won't take calls anymore. I think everybody should be mandated, and I'm going to go vote on that poll question. We got a lot to get to in the final hour of the show. Mail sack coming up at 8:15. Is this a problem for Oregon, or is this gamesmanship for Oregon? I want to get that coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll start, though, with a question about a coach. Has he learned earned? And what were the expectations for this player? Loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.